QSC, QSC, QSC. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. All right, the Tech Tuesday topic for tonight, we're going to pull from page 37 of the new March issue of QST. And basically, it shows how to build and all the math and everything involved, construction details for real simple little ground plane, basically built with a similar to an SO239, but actually they're using end connectors because this is for 1200 megahertz. Yes, 1.2 gigahertz band, but all of these are scalable to just about any frequency band. So we'll talk about them a little bit, and a little cute little J pole built with a connector, a little bit different where the bottom is not shorted. The center connector is actually used for the one small leg to use a radio, what would you call it, coupling, RF coupling to the main element. So a little bit different from the normal J pole, but still works pretty good. However, let's get our roster out of the way here. All of those who check in on a regular basis, and some that don't. Anyway, let's see, gotta find my sheet. Oh, there it is. It was hiding. All right, starting with WB6CLZ Mike.
Good evening, Tom and the net. WB6CLZ in Placentia.
Good evening, Mike. Good signal. A little hot on the audio. Felt you were right here in my ear. But that's okay. We're glad to hear you out there. That's the main thing. How about WB6CIN, Cindy?
This is WB6CIN.
Good evening, Cindy. Glad to have you out there. How about KA6CIA, George?
Good evening, Tom. KA6CIA.
And good evening, George. Glad to have you with us from Lucerne Valley. And you might be getting some snow, too, down there. How about that? All right. Next, I have KJ6HCS, Mike. And we don't have Mike out there this evening. How about WA6ITC, Rod?
Yeah, we're here. WA6ITC.
And good evening, Rod. I know it's snowing here. Probably is over there. Probably it's snowing everywhere up here now. Glad to have you with us, Rod. How about KJ6FIL, Mike and Redlands?
Good evening, all. KJ6FIL.
And good evening, Mike. Thanks for being with us. How about KJ6KDL and KJ6KDK?
KJ6KDL here with
KDK.
And good evening, Jim and Rosemary. Thanks for being out there. Let's move on down here to, let's see, nope, he's not back till summertime. How about KI6IQA Kelly?
Good evening, KI6IQA.
And good evening, Kelly. Thanks for being out there. Eastern Big Bear. How about K9AOG? Stephen from Long Beach, are you out there? Yeah, nothing out there from Stephen. How about K6GBL? Ron from Green Valley.
Good evening, Tom and Ed. This is Ron, K6GVL, and still having problems with the people to the south.
Well, sorry about that. Not a lot we can do, too much. Maybe we might have a solution coming up this summer. More power. I don't know. We'll see what we can do. All right, how about AD6PL, Harold, Riverside?
AD6PL.
Good evening, Harold. Glad to have you out there. How about KJ6PYV, Dave Sugarloaf?
Good evening, Tom and the Net. KJ6PYV, checking in from Sugarloaf.
And good evening, Dave. Thanks for being out there. Let's see, we have W6JLM and W6KMM, Judith and Ken.
Good evening, Tom. This is W6JLM. How are you reading me on this radio?
You're sounding just fine. Just a little pop or two there in, once in a while, but not too bad.
Alrighty, I just put a new battery pack in this radio. So anyway, thanks for the good news on this. And W6KMM is right here also checking in. W6JLM.
All right, good deal. Glad to have you both listening in this evening. Appreciate that. I also have here, how about K2BBL? Alan, are you out there?
K2BBL, Alan from Moon Ridge.
And Alan, good evening. Glad to have you join us. And let's move on down the list to K6YNW. Chris, are you out there? Nothing out there from Chris. How about W6POO? Chip. And I've heard from Chip. How about Ron, WA6HF? Yeah, Ron. How about KD6LAN Bill? I think he's under his car. He's always under his car. How about WA6DLB? Donna, are you out there? And nothing heard there. How about NQ7RD? Rick, are you out there this evening? They're all watching TV or something. All right, moving on to the next sheet here. Let's see, I have AE6CK Victor.
Good evening, Tom and the group. Victor's Santa Fe Springs, and I'm wondering if it's snowing in Antigua right now, over.
Well, good evening, Victor. Yes, it is. Snowing out there. Started a little while back, and not a lot of accumulation yet, so we'll have to see what happens over the next day. Probably not going to be as much as they say, but they say all kinds of different things, so we don't know. Anyway, always check back. I'll let you know. Next, I have KA6ROD Rod from Moon Ridge. Nothing heard from Rod. How about KB6LTY Christy? Nothing there. How about W6JET Rob?
Good evening to the net, W6JET.
Good evening, Rob. Temple City tonight, I guess?
Yeah, down here where no snow, no rain yet either.
All right, better check the elevation of Temple City. They say the snow's getting really low in this storm. All right, how about KJ6RAY, Ray?
Good evening, Tom, KJ6RAY Mobile.
And good evening, Ray. Thanks for being out there. All right, that's the major list as I have it. We always have a few others that do like to check in as guests. And anybody out there right now would like to check in as a guest, please come back to KF6Q. Alrighty. Well, that made that simple. Alrighty. Well, let's see here. I got a pretty cool topic here picked out by Jim, KJ6KDL. Actually, we have a couple other subtopics if we get time for that. Well, Mike, I'm going to hand it over to you. Is there anything to report for DX, and is anything special happening out there in space weather besides that huge meteor that just blew up over Russia?
Yeah, wasn't that cool? There was all kinds of stuff on the internet on that. That was exciting. Glad it was in Russia. Anyway, well, let's get on this end, but Space Weather is reporting, at spaceweather.com, is reporting a sunspot number of 92 and a solar flux index of 105 solar flux units. We do have a sunspot, AR1676, that is growing rapidly, and we could see some activity out of that. We could, it has the potential for significant flares, so, you know, keep an eye on that, and we may get some flaring out of that. Things may pick up in the sun realm. Anyway, back to you. Maybe somebody else has got some good DX to talk about. Back to you, Tom.
All right, Mike, thanks for all that. Yeah, no, that was pretty interesting about that. Mike, I don't know if you had looked into that, but we had that other meteor asteroid, actually that passed very close by, did not hit us. Has anybody said anything about that being tied or in the same path of travel as the other one?
Not anything that I've heard. I haven't really done much Googling or looking at things. I've been kind of busy with the business. But yeah, not anything that I've heard about. But I did know that, I do know that I got quite a few emails regarding the one in Russia, the meteor in Russia that came in. The other one was pretty close, more closer than the moon. Now, for an asteroid of the size that thing was, you know, we're glad it kind of went on its merry way.
Comment. Yeah, real quick, you're right back to you, Harold. Well, not only was it closer than the moon, it was closer than the stationary orbit of the satellites around the Earth, I believe. They're at 22,000 miles, moon's 250,000 miles. This thing was only at 17, I think. That's what it was predicted. Not sure if that's exactly where it went. That's real close. That's closer than going around the world once at the equator. Anyway, Harold, yes, go ahead.
Just a comment on NASA. They said that there was no connection whatsoever between these two. That meteor kind of sneaked by everybody. The Russians apparently saw it on some of their equipment shortly before it got there, but it was too late to even warn anybody, so there wasn't any connection. 86PL.
Well, I know if we saw something like that coming across the sky, or they did back in the Cold War days, it'd be like, oh no. Well, the meteor would be the last thing crossing our minds. And that is pretty fantastic that it essentially, you know, it's like the magic act. Watch over up this week while the other meteor comes in. And boy, that's what happened. So, anyway, very big kaboom. Probably very similar. I'm not sure. Harold, are you familiar with that one? What is it, 19-something earlier on last century over Siberia? Something blew up. Probably close to the same thing, I would guess. Back to you, Harold.
Yeah, I think that the other one was somewhat larger. It knocked down 850 square miles of trees, so it blew up right over a totally unpopulated area, but I'm sure there were a few people lived up in there, trappers, maybe a few farmers, but it was more or less a desolate area, but it flattened. Just, I've seen pictures of it, and there was 850 square miles of timber went flat down, and these people were really lucky. Apparently nobody was killed, and only 50 people ended up in the hospital. The damage I saw on the internet was tremendous. Back to net control, 86PL.
Yeah, rather incredible how that can happen. And hopefully we don't have any more. Well, we know we're going to have more. That's a given. That's just a given. so we'll have to see what happens.
All right. Well, is anybody else out there on the HF side that has had any great DX? Please come back. All right. Well, looks like nobody's out there doing DX. And actually, if the conditions aren't right, looks like this solar cycle is really kind of lagging a little bit, but hey, it is what it is. Well, Mike, we have this article here. This is page 37. This is by Don Dorward, call sign Victor Alpha 3, DDN, and pretty cool here. This is for actually, I guess we'd call this the beginning of the microwave area, bands, whatever, 1.2 megahertz, or 1200 megahertz, 1.2 gigahertz, and this is also referred to as the 23 centimeter band. Well, Mike, right off the bat, that looks like something we built at your garage about a couple of years ago, except we did it for 2 meters.
Yes, sir, it sure does, Tom. Cute little spider thing, though. It is, yeah. It turns out that the guy has a repeater. He had a 1200 megahertz, 23 centimeter rig. Has a repeater in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and his little rubber ducky wasn't enough to make it into the repeater. So he played around with antennas and came up with these two designs. Very interesting. Like you said, it's an end connector, brass rods for the elements and for the radials. And everything is here. It's easy. It's some brass rods, like you said, the end connector, some crimp type stakeons, although I think I'd solder them too, make them a little more rugged. Let's get into this thing. Back to you, Tom.
All right, and I do have to add into this, just for everybody out there who, if you don't know this, you will know it now. Anyway, Echolink runs out of our station right here, and we link it up to the repeater, and we use actually a little similar ground, it's called a ground plane antenna from here. Now, that's not the one I'm transmitting on right now. That antenna, which is a high gain diamond, is probably about 40 feet away from that. But this cute little one I built for 2 meter, very, very similar to what he's done here. And, it's very easy to do. I will say one thing. I did try using those crimp-on connectors, and I did not have a lot of success. They weren't really very strong. I filled them up with solder on those rods, and that seemed to help. Let me reset here real quick. And inevitably, I took the screws out and simply soldered them right to the plate. Of course, I'm not using an end connector. I was using a UHF connector. But actually, I had to kind of reinforce them. So they do work. They probably would work better for this antenna because the legs are short. There's not a lot of weight there. But for 2 meters, they tended to get a little spiny out there. And, if you set it on something, all of a sudden the angle would change and your match would change and stuff like that. So probably best to have something a little more beefy for some of the other frequencies. And we say this is scalable. Mike, scalable, what does that mean?
It means that you can make it for different frequencies and different bands. I would think that's in the context that they're using it. And on the next page, they've got all of the all of the information you need to design the elements. So I wouldn't be too surprised if you could even make one of these for scaling up to 2 meters, up to maybe 430, 420, 400 megs, and make it for that. I don't know if you could make it any higher frequencies than 1200, because we're getting kind of tiny here. Back to you.
Well, I think now we're going to hand this over to Jim just for a second. I believe it could be used, especially with that end connector, is doable. Also, there's another connector called an SMA. Now, these are smaller. They're really tiny. SMA connectors start to be really popular, especially getting up into the super high frequencies. and they work very well, and connectors also very, very well at that range. So essentially shorting or cutting the dimensions in half, approximately, this would work for 2.4 gigahertz, twice the frequency. And I'm going to hand it over to Jim, KJ6KDL. Jim, 2.4 gigahertz. Well, why does that frequency ring a bell?
Thank you, Tom. That's what I was looking at. Every now and then, QST puts out a magazine dedicated to antennas and various frequencies, and those of us who are still just tech class don't get around too much on the varying frequencies, and a lot of the HF stuff we don't pay attention to, large, et cetera, et cetera. However, this caught my eye because 1.2 gigahertz is half of 2.4 gigahertz, and those who are already shaking their heads going, Jim, get to it, that's the frequency that most people have on their Wi-Fi routers if they're using the classic BG or N-series routers. And why would we want that? How many people are gamers? There are some people who go to gaming conventions and they plug all their computers into a Wi-Fi network and play other people. And sometimes the signal's just not that good. Wouldn't it be nice to have a better antenna? How about field day? Last year we ran around with a bunch of memory sticks. Wouldn't it be nice if we could connect all the computers to a central computer and not have to worry about memory sticks and not have to worry about signal flux? So that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, KF6Q here, Tech Tuesday, and the group. Well, Jim, and that's actually what we try to inspire here at Tech Tuesday, is thinking outside the box, going beyond what they have in the articles, and looking at some of the articles, not in a complex manner, but just in a common sense manner. And that's a great idea. I know you had mentioned this to me, and that's why I think this is really great to have as our topic. So, yeah, a lot of good applications there. There's one good thing about the little spider, we'll call him Spidey, the Spidey ground plane with the little center coming up out of the center connector, and you've also got instant connection, of course, on the bottom. That works really great. It's really easy to solder stuff, too, provided you use, you know, proper heat and all that good stuff. And with all that said, it's omnidirectional, so you have to worry about, you know, which direction is it pointing. And that's pretty good, too. Pretty neat. Well, Mike, let's move on over to the second antenna he has in this article. And it's kind of like a J-pole, but it doesn't look like the J-poles we've built, but it kind of works like a J-pole. Mike, what do you think of that thing?
One more comment on the ground plane. What I think is really cool is the little tuning element on top. They put a 632 screw in a nut to lock it, so you can get that little extra tenth of an inch to get it right on frequency. Yeah, the J-pole looks kind of cool. They have the driven element in the center, you know, of the connector, and then they have the I guess on a J-pole it's called a reflector, but in one of the screws where the radials would go on the other one. Very cool, and it looks like you can also, just the same as the original one, as the ground plane, put that in some 1-inch PVC conduit, run your coax right down through the center of the conduit, and get that thing up there about 10 feet. Good HOA areas, restricted areas where you can kind of lay the thing down on the lawn during the day and do your operating at night. Make a really neat little stealth antenna. Let's see if I'm picking up anything else about that. They're telling you to use the good quality end connectors. I know all of us would anyway. But back to you, Tom, and I'll look at this a little bit closer.
Yeah, you know, and while we're looking at this is built with end connectors because of the frequency, primarily. UHF connectors, would they physically work? Yes. Would they work at that frequency? Not as well. They tend to be a little lossy, as we call them, and actually even end connectors are better, even on the 2 meter band, they're actually better at any band. They're a little more pricey, though. So, you know, that's why we don't use them unless we have to. But at this frequency, getting above 440 and up, they tend to be a necessity. So, and I know that they get a little bulky as we get into the higher bands, and a lot of SMA connectors are also used. They also work very good. You have to kind of look at this stuff. Well, here, the cool thing is, if anybody out there's ever been into a hobby shop, I think we've all passed by the K&S Precision Metals. What is that? That's that little thing with all the little brass square tubes and angles and tubings and all the little cool stuff that look like built construction materials for a miniature high-rise. Let me reset. And if you don't have one nearby, I'll give you this website. Their website is www.ksmetals, that's the letter KS Metals all together, .com. It's ksmetals.com. And I'm sure they have online ordering with that, if you don't. But otherwise, look for your local hobby shop, hobby store, hobby shack, whatever, and a lot of them carry that. If you're up in the Big Bear area, believe it or not, our now primary lumberyard up here, Butcher Block, has a whole section of KS stuff. So they have it down there. That's pretty cool. So we don't have the hobby shack. We do have Butcher Block, and they do have it in the back. So pretty cool stuff. Anyway, Mike, I'll hand it back to you just for a second.
Getting back to the 2.4 gigahertz, I know that I have one here, and they work really, really cool. It, MFJ makes them. They're about $30, and it is a Yagi antenna, 16 elements, and has about a 15 dB gain over isotropic. They're only about 18 inches long, and they do have the SMA connectors on them, so it'll connect right up to your Wi-Fi stuff. Pretty cool. I don't use it anymore, but I did use it before I got my router and everything all hooked up here to pick up Wi-Fi from my QTH. So a lot of different ways to go on it.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool thing, too. Of course, you have to be careful you're not picking up the Wi-Fi from your neighbor's QTH. They kind of frown on that. That's a whole other topic in itself. Pretty neat the way this is all set up. I like the ingenuity here of basically using stuff that's available. And here again, like I said, the little crimp on eyelet connectors, they would probably work really well with this. As like I said, I did have issues with that with the 2 meter side. Tried it, and even after filling them with solder, that kind of made them a little bit stiffer, but ended up actually clamping them, soldering them right to the plate. Just a little bit too much, I think, for the length, because each leg is approximately a quarter of a wavelength, so big difference between 1200 megahertz and 147 megahertz. Well, Jim, I'm going to hand it back to you. Anything you'd like to add? This is pretty cool stuff. Maybe we need to try to build something like this. Back to you, Jim, KJ6KDL from KF6Q, Tech Tuesday, and the group.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Yeah, that's the idea, keeping in the spirit of ham radio. Build it yourself. Yeah, you can buy something off the shelf and use it as is, and it works. But if you like to play around, the thing I like about this article, and they mentioned this, and some people probably don't have it yet, but I broke down and got mine, the ARRL antenna book. I've got the 21st edition, the 22nd just recently came out, and that's referenced in here on page 38 of this article in a gray box, is mention of things to take into consideration when you're building the antenna. And at this frequency, the diameter of the rods is very important, and he points out to a figure 2.8, which in my book is page 2-5, the end of a roughly three-page article on impedance of a center-fed dipole and the Q factor, basically how wide of a frequency band that you have. So if you're interested, the math is in there. So you can see what he did, and maybe you could go back and try to figure out what he did and look. You mentioned some very large cable, LMR 400 and RG 213, and I have LMR 400 about 7 feet left from my home project, which would work. It would fit in the tube, but it would not fit on an SMA connector. And the final thing I have, and this is a question maybe you can help me answer, the J-Pole, he mentions he got an SWR of 1.8 to 1 when he his quarter wave, he got an actual flat reading, which is, I'm assuming, a 1.1 to 1 or a 1.0 to 1. And I'm wondering if maybe using the physical constraints of the connector to create the gap for the long rod on the J-pole, maybe that's what's causing it. But without the gear, can't really test it, but it'd be fun to play around with placement of the of that J-pole, see if we could get that SWR a little bit nicer.
Well, good point there. And actually, well, you'll see that his J-pole is quite a bit different than the normal J-pole. The normal J-pole we build is literally a J, and we tap into that a little bit back up from the bottom. We actually feed to each conductor, it doesn't matter, center feed or whatever, and we actually are up from the bottom of a shorted J, the bottom of the J being shorted. What he has here is not so. Basically, he's got the center conductor feeding straight through insulated, using that as a radiator and using this passive radiation to the other element, which still acts in the same fashion as a J-pole, but the problem is he's not getting the match. The reason we do tap up like that is that we are able to adjust that to get a perfect one-to-one, and with what he has here, he's not getting that. And there's probably, as long as you build it as it's shown, you probably will never get anything better than that. But trying to tap in like we normally do is going to be almost impossible. So this is kind of a trade-off. It's physically easier to build, or physically even just possible at all to build, but you're going to have to be giving up on a few things there. So anyway, the 1.8, just something they have to live with. Any other questions, Jim? Back to you just for a minute from KO6Q in the group.
Yeah, the only other comment that as frequency goes up, the physical size of the antenna goes down, and just that quarter wave, that center pole is 2.2 inches long, so at Wi-Fi frequencies of 2.4 gigahertz, you're looking at a quarter wave of 1.1 inches approximately, and that long rod on that J-pole is about 6.4 inches from what I calculated, so half of that would be a quarter wave. If they did a quarter wave, that may be a half wave antenna, so we might be able to play with that, but that's amazing to think of how small that is, how easy that would be to carry around and be able to utilize. Not like carrying your long wave antennas around. KJ6KDL.
You know, and also here, as you say, as the frequency goes up, the size of everything goes down, which is one major reason why you will seldom see twin lead, window line, of anything like that feeding an antenna much above a lot of the HF frequency. You start getting into VHF and UHF, the distance between those two wires has to start shrinking because now you're not looking at an antenna that's 120 feet long for a dipole. You're looking at something that's maybe 19 inches long, if or actually, you know, even less, 14 inches long. The size of the antenna, the lead, actually the window line, would be so close together, it just was not practical. So it's almost mandatory to go to some type of coax. And then, of course, it's really important to have quality coax. I cannot stress that enough. As we have learned this in the past, even RG8X is not good at 2 meter, and definitely is you're never going to get a signal to an antenna at 70 centimeters or anything above. So you got to really start thinking about coax. You don't need anything really heavy, but you need to look at the attenuation charts and stuff like that. Very, very important. Yeah, when you start playing around with stuff like this, you get away with a lot at HF frequencies. When you start getting up to the higher stuff, it starts getting a little bit more particular of what you can use. Well, Mike, I'm going to hand it back to you just for a second. KF6Q, back to WV6CLZ.
Just add to that. can't stress enough how good quality coax really does matter, or even hardline if you have the wherewithal to do it. Okie dokie. Well, very interesting, and gosh, simple to make. You go down and get some number 10 crimp on steak on, and go to, even Home Depot has this kind of stuff. The only place you would really have to go to a radio store or some place is for the end connectors. Other than that, gosh, off-the-shelf stuff, and I'm ready to rock and roll with these guys. Back to you, Tom.
You know, and as always, of course, he also shows here where if you have solid rod versus brass tubing, changes things a little bit. There's some little particulars here. The K factor essentially is that special number. We don't pay too much attention to it at lower frequencies, but that's the relationship of the diameter or thickness of the elements. In this case, he's got 3/32 brass rod, you know, or tubing similar to that size, and that is compared to the actual frequency you're using. So obviously, as the frequency goes up, even the tubing itself would want to shrink in diameter. It's going to get to the point where it's pretty difficult to build. But anyway, welding supply or welding rod, brass brazing rod, actually, brass rod, without the coating on it, also works really well. A lot of different things you can use here, and it's all good. So, well, anyway, one more time back to Jim. Anything else to add? And then we'll pause here for any questions.
Okay. Yeah, that was very good. I just did a quick look to see if I do a search for 2.4 gigahertz coax cable. RG6 quad-shielded coax is actually rated at 2.4 gigahertz. 1,000 feet is $126 on the website I found called Smart Home. So I think we could find something that's a noticeably smaller cable, single solid core, easier to work with at higher frequencies. So I think I might be going with that in a smaller tube. That'd be a nice small antenna. So, and yes, the diameter of everything, the K factors, if you have your ARL book, go to page 2-3 and start reading on impedance. When you get to 2-5, you will get to that figure 2-8 that he references. It's just a slew of ones you can read on what happens to the Q factor with diameter. KJ6KDL.
Well, good deal. You know, and that's where, like you say, RG6, now we know RG6 is actually 75 ohm instead of 50, but there are ways to adapt that really easily to 50 ohms, and a little transmission line trickery, or transformers, actually, they're called TLTs, but transformer line trickery, we'll call it that, and get it back to our 50 ohms, and that's all good. And actually, the angle of the little spidey antenna there, the ground plane, adjusting those legs actually changes its impedance off of 50. We're right now at 45 degrees angle down, it's 50, about 50 ohms. As you start bringing them either steeper or back up flatter, you can change that impedance. So it's very tunable that way. And even with the other thing on the top, the little screw is great. So there's a lot of adjustment with that stuff. So anyway, anybody out there, any questions or comments on making these cute little homemade J-poles and ground planes? Please come back to KF6Q and the group.
86 PL.
Yes, Harold, go ahead.
Comment on source of supply. K&H Metals, right next to Electronic Warehouse over on North Main, has copper-coated brazing rod, and it's extremely cheap, which I think probably would work a little better than just straight brazing rod. 86 PL.
Very good point. And I know they did have some up here, however, that's been a couple years ago. I did buy them out. Well, I just couldn't help myself. They had quite a bit there. They were not moving it, and they actually had the flux coated, which was more popular. It had all this, it was not flux coated. and went there. They had a couple of big stacks, or actually in the tubes, and had two different sizes. Got some very, very skinny stuff, so that probably worked pretty cool. It's about 1/16 in diameter, so that's about 2/3 of what we have here. That would probably work pretty good. So, Jim, if you're interested, I have that supply still, so I haven't really dove into that. And pretty neat, yeah, pretty neat. A lot of good stuff here. I know we don't play around with this that much. The biggest thing, and I'll reset here real quick. Yeah, the biggest thing about tuning this stuff up, even if you have an MFJ meter, they don't go this high, and even mine doesn't even go to the 440 band. So what you got to do is just pretty much do some good calcs and, you know, build it with great care on the length and, you know, hope that it works. Or have a very good friend that has a thing called a network analyzer. That's the fancy name of the high-frequency analyzer, actually a very more expensive and complex piece of equipment. However, that will allow you to check out, you know, the tuning capacity of that, and that's all good too. And we do have a few people out there in the club that have that. I don't think there's anybody up. I'm not sure if they're up here on the hill. Of course, we have Rod over there, WA6ITC. I think he owns every piece of test equipment ever made. I don't know if you're still out there, Rod, but I do believe that's true. Anyway, so, well, that pretty much wraps that up this evening. Pretty cool topic. We did have another topic, which would be on page 45, for stacking Yagis. That's kind of cool. We've talked about that, and they have that in this article, in this issue, and it's kind of neat. You know, if you want to have a lot of gain and a lot of directivity, but you don't want something that's got about 23 million elements sticking out front, there's a way to stack, you know, Yagis and combine them sideways, up above each other. Bob, WA6MQF, did this with some 2-meter antennas for his EME work. And there's actually just something called a harness, a matching harness that's made. And that's part of the trick right there, is the distance between them and getting that harness, which is simply more quarter wave tuned sections. Not that complex, not really. So maybe we can delve into that next week. So anyway, last statement there, Mike, real quick, back to you. I'll hand it over then to Jim, and then we'll probably close down Tech Tuesday for this evening. Back to you, Mike.
Just wondering, is there any activity in the valley on the 1200 megahertz band that you know of, Tom? Or is it, I know there's a little 440, but is there anybody on the 1200 megahertz band? Is there anything going on up there?
Best I know, I think Lanny had some gear. Not sure, because I know he was playing around with some of that stuff a couple years back when we were looking at ATV stuff, and I think he has some radio gear. I do not know if there's anybody else up here, and I'm not sure if he's even still active with that. Back to you, Mike.
Talk to him in the morning. I will ask him personally and see. Yeah, I think I've heard him talk about that, but I wasn't sure if, you know, if there really was any other activity up there. Okay, just a question, and I guess we'll find out. Back to you, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool. I would, myself, would be interested in playing around with 2.4 with the routers and gear we have here. That's the only thing I have that's similar to a radio transmitter is the Wi-Fi stuff. The highest thing I have is basically 440. You know, a good point here, too, and Ron's not out there this evening, WA6HF. However, there's a great popularity out there, the 900 megahertz band, and, you know, that's kind of like in between 440. That's our band between 440 and 1200. So you kind of scale that down about, I'm going to say about, cut off about a third or whatever, do the calcs, and this would also be very good for that frequency band. So that would work pretty cool. So anyway, a lot of good stuff there. A lot of variations that can be done. Anyway, I'll hand it back over to you, Jim, real quick, and then we'll get ready to close Tech Tuesday for this evening. Back to you, Jim.
Okay, I think that about does it for me and the 2.4 gigahertz, 1.2 gigahertz, now 900 megahertz idea for a small quarter-wave dipole. I look forward to the stacking Yagis and whatever else we can cover next Tuesday.
Comment?
Yes, Harold, go ahead.
For whatever it's worth, I am never built any of these anything by cutting brass rod, but I read one article that, pardon my voice here, I'm getting messed up. I read one article that if you cut it with nippers, to be sure and file the little edges off that come up there, come slopes up like a house roof, they said to file it down flat or as round as you can get it, and that way it does a better job of transmitting for some reason, or perhaps matching, I'm not sure. They didn't really explain it, just said that to get the particular project this guy wrote about to work properly, you should do that. And thought I'd throw that out so that might save you a lot of headaches trying to get something to match that won't. I cut it a little long and file each cut place and then file it down as you need it to get where you want it to 86 feel.
You know, Harold, I'm glad you mentioned that because a couple of years back when I was not too far from Corona, I used to go to the San Bernardino Microwave Society meetings. Pretty cool. Pretty high-tech stuff there. And one of the members of our club, who's also an avid participant in microwave stuff, Jeff, he's out there in the Phelan area. Anyway, he made with a partner of his out there, Larry, I think that was the name, approximately a 14 or 15 element 2.4 gigahertz antenna, and took the time to do a good job with the elements and the boom and all that. Of course, it was a lot of effort trying to mechanically build it more than electronically build it. And so what they did is they ended up drilling holes undersized, reaming the holes to the proper size, so they would get that machined out to the proper size and then press through the elements. Now, of course, to get the elements to go through, they had beveled the ends a little bit so they'd start. And that threw off the tuning of the antenna, even though the elements were cut right on. Because they were beveled, it was different. It changed the tuning. And he found that out the hard way, so he had to go back and kind of redo that. So what you're saying with that rooftop or bevel on the end does change the tuning. Best to cut a little bit long, and as you said, that's a great idea. I think that's what they ended up doing, is cutting them long, pressing them in, and then filing that off the one end, of course, to get it back to frequency. So that's the why. It actually changes the tuning, and probably those frequencies, anything, would come up that works there. Back to you, Harold, real quick.
I remember reading that, and whenever you're talking about using brazing rod, why, I said, oh, if you nip it, according to the article I read, like I said, I've never made an antenna where I just used brazing rod, so I had never run across it personally, but I thought it makes sense. As I've read articles that tell you that if you're using brazing rod to make sure that you don't scar it anywhere on the links, make sure you have a good clean rod that's not been deep scratches or anything of that nature, that changes everything. So whenever you get down to those little bitty pieces like that, don't take a whole lot. 86 PO.
And very good info. Like I said, I'm glad. And this is what, of course, why we enjoy Tech Tuesday. We always can pool our information like that. And one thing leads to another. Next thing you know, we get a lot of good stuff out there for everybody. So, well, anyway, guess there's really not much else on that. We'll hang out here for a little bit. Just a little announcement, which I did not announce this earlier, just to keep in mind, if you're into all that stuff, M Squared is coming up again on their 15th annual open house. This will be Saturday, March 16th, not too far away, less than a month, from 8 to 1. Of course, this is way up in Fresno, a little bit of a drive up right off of Highway 99, so a lot of good stuff there. That's on March 16th. So I got an email from them today, and forgot to mention that on our announcements. But anyway, good stuff there if you're a driver and like to drive. It's pretty far for me, though. That's Fresno. If I didn't have to go, if gasoline wasn't $5 million a gallon, probably would think about it. All right. Last call for anybody with any comments. All right, well, this is KF6Q and the group here. And another great Tech Tuesday, I think. Good information, kind of cool little projects. So we'll clear out for this evening. QST, QST, QST. Good magazine, too. Anyway, this is Tom Fry, KF6Q, net control for the Tech Tuesday net. We'll be closing our net this evening at 1900 hours and 51 minutes. I'd like to thank everybody out there who's listened in. Love everybody who participated. And, of course, it's always welcome for everybody to listen or comment through all of our Tech Tuesdays. Not a problem. So hope to see you all next week. And we'll try to look at stacking some Yagis. Not a really big article there, and we'll probably have another one to go with that also. See everybody next week. Take care. Stay dry, safe, warm, all that good stuff. Stay out of the weather. See you again. And, one other announcement for everybody out there, too, with the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. Don't forget, coming up this Saturday. So there's another announcement I forgot. Oh, well. That's what happens when you get old. All right. Take care. Return the repeater back to normal use. This is KF6Q.